I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Podcart and welcome to a special edition of the podcast, and I'm here with LP Records impresario Lorenzo.
Hello.
And we're in your shop.
Mm-hmm.
And you are based in the West End of Glasgow.
Yep.
How long have you been here?
October 2015, so about 2.5 years.
And how difficult was it to open a record shop? Be honest now.
It was pretty terrifying. The closer we got to it, it was more cleaning and DIY and stuff for the months leading up to it. But I was always excited about it. If you ask my mum was terrified as soon as I told her.
And am I allowed, I shouldn't really ask this, but I'm going to. How old are you, Lorenzo?
I am 23.
Which is fucking impressive for you to open a shop at 23.
Thank you.
And were you, was your mum, so you said she was terrified.
Yeah,
is she proud of you now?
I hope so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. And are you from Glasgow?
Yeah.
And you've been born and bred here?
Yep, East End.
What was your first musical memory?
Oh God. I remember vividly when I would leave school. I used to get the train home since I was like 10, and the school was in the middle of town. So we'd kind of walk down to the train, you'd pass HMV every day. And I used to be obsessed with buying CD singles. So I remember picking up Orson and Embrace and probably Hardfi, and like stuff I'm really embarrassed about now.
I would be embarrassed about Hardfi.
Yeah, but I do vividly remember just the wall of CD singles, because they were like £1.
Yeah.
So you've got that extra pound that's not your train fare, and you would just, I would just spend it on anything that looked half decent, or that I'd heard on like, was Beat 106 a radio station?
Yeah, maybe? It was.
Right, okay. Anything I heard on Beat 106 that I liked, I would see if it was on the wall, and I'd get it before I got on the train home, and then my dad might pick me up from the train station, and I would put it straight on the car.
So indie seemed to feature quite prominently.
Yeah.
And so what, I mean, in, you know, people go through various trends of indie, grunge, hip-hop. Was your musical taste fairly eclectic as time went on?
I think so. I remember being 11, 12 and wearing Guns N' Roses t-shirts all the time, and like that was real music, that kind of chat, the whole real music thing. So I was wearing Led Zeppelin, Guns N' Roses, I had all the posters on my wall. I was like classic rock or nothing.
Yeah.
And then I got more into radio stations like that, like indie radio stations playing guitar indie. And I guess it just got more sophisticated from there. I hope so. But it seemed to just kind of, it started off embarrassing. And then, yeah, it gets more eclectic the more exposed you get to, I guess even like Spotify coming out when I was at school.
And so what on earth made you think that you wanted to open a record shop?
I mean, I'm not a vinyl nerd. I'm a music nerd. Like I was doing marketing at uni, and I just wanted to do something in music. But I had like, I don't play in bands, I don't play instruments, I had no pals in music or anything like that. And then I went to the States for a couple of weeks just to like, and I had this idea in my head, I'm gonna email tons of people and get an internship somewhere, and that'll be so amazing, I'll definitely do that. And when I came back, I was all kind of enthused, I'd met some nice people and stuff like that, and the shop was up for sale, and I'd worked for the last like 2 years, and it was a really dodgy shop, so it was like nobody wanted to touch the lease or anything like that. So it just was like a week of convincing myself, because I would buy tons of records, but I felt like I was going online a lot more than I would like to.
Yeah.
Like, you can't fill all the gaps in all the different shops here. So I knew there was a market for people like me. So it's just that and convincing myself for a good wee while that it was affordable, possible, and worth trying.
And so in terms of what you stock here, I've obviously flicked through... and I bought the Shame album today because I've become quite obsessed with them. It seems to be fairly kind of new records.
Yeah.
Was that a conscious decision?
Yeah, definitely. I get really excited about how every Friday kind of leads our success. If it's a really good new music Friday, we have a really good week. I kind of like that we rely on what art comes out on that weekend. And I like the buzz of new music. I don't get that bogged down too much with... I kind of have like a what have you done for me lately approach to bands. I don't really care about a band that hasn't put a record out in 4 or 5 years unless they're like my favourite band.
Yeah.
So I just like that buzz of new music and constantly discovering new things.
Yeah.
And when you're in here every day, you get, you know, 8 hours to sit and put on whatever you want. So it's a lot easier than most people's lives to keep up with new music.
And do you find that creates quite a happy balance to your life, being able to do that as part of your job?
Yeah, because it's what I would be, you know, if I worked in an office, I'd have my headphones on all day. you know, so it, or if I was coming home from work, I'd be putting on music, whereas I don't have to do that now.
Yeah.
It's almost like a nice break to come home from work and not be listening to music sometimes. So it's, yes, it's the most important thing in my life, work-wise and leisure-wise. Like, I go a lot of gigs, so it's nice to kind of have the two feed off each other.
And do you get, one of the questions I wanted to ask you, especially when I was going through the racks there, was do you get people that come in that are kind of traditional vinyl buyers or old school music know-it-alls and go, why aren't you stocking the Rolling Stones, or why aren't you stocking such and such? And
yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's fine, but it's just not, like, not everyone can stock everything, which is why there's so many great shops here already, but I wasn't completely fulfilled in what I wanted to buy. So everyone's got to fill in the gaps, and I think we're just filling in the gaps.
Totally. You filled a niche, which is really awesome.
That's all we're trying to do, yeah. Really, because it's not, I don't see any competition between us all. We all do very much different things sometimes. Yeah. There's the odd big release that we'll share, but it would bore me to death if I was selling Rolling Stones reissues to 14-year-olds and their dads from forever. You'd probably make a lot more money, but it would bore me to death.
And what are your, I mean, obviously you've fulfilled, I'm assuming this is a dream for you to do.
Well, that's the thing, like every time I get asked, my dream isn't to run a record shop. And I don't think I'll be doing this for like the rest of my life or anything like that. But my career, or I get to make a living sharing new music and meeting people who are super interested in new music, which is the important thing for me right now. That's kind of all I care about, is the immediate. I don't have kids, I don't have a mortgage.
Yeah.
You know, the important thing for me is I'm having fun and I'm doing something productive and creative that will help me in the future, and I'll get to meet interested people, do interesting things. So that's all I really think about, is how good it is right now.
And what are still some of your kind of fears, either doing this or going forward? What are you scared of?
I mean, all it takes is a bad month of new releases for me to go, oh, fuck, what are we going to do here? Are we going to pay that bill at the end of the month? And then, like, January's quiet. So just the obvious, the things everyone goes through of quiet months, stuff like that. It's a wee bit scarier when you're so niche and when you're so kind of... We do just roll week to week with new releases. So you can't quite pinpoint too many things that are, like, guaranteed moneymakers, which is why Record Store Day is great, because it is just a big day. And you can kind of see that in your future when you've got bills to pay and go, that's a big... busy day.
So that was something I was going to ask you, because obviously as a consumer and someone that works in the music industry, and a lot of people that I know, including artists now, so from the label perspective, from a DIY label, and you'll probably kind of know this because of, we'll talk about the label that you have as part of the shop, the amount of kind of processing and just making vinyls in the lead up to that is a fucking nightmare. Mm-hmm. Because A, it's just so busy, and B, you can sometimes get pushed to the bottom of the chain if there's a bigger artist wanting to get there. Also, it's the other downside for a lot of people is that it's become such a corporate exercise.
Totally.
And the big labels have come, you know, they've taken over. But for you, and I've spoken to Love Music, and I guess Monorail as well, and countless other record stores, it is the decider whether that can keep your store open for the year.
Yeah, 100%.
So when for me, that's a massive positive. Mm-hmm. So did you have that outlook before, and have you changed your mind since you've opened the store?
I used to queue for Record Store Day. Like, I did used to go to Mono and queue.
Yeah.
But I'd have my eye on like a few things. I didn't really care too much about the whole big day. The first year we opened, I actually was going to not do Record Store Day, because I was like, oh, it's such a I don't know, I had the same ideas in my head. But I mean, doing it, there's definitely just so many pointless releases and there's so much shite to go through, but if we didn't do it the first year, I don't think we'd be open.
Wow.
I really don't. If I had just like, and I think I applied the last day you could apply. So if I didn't apply that day, I don't think we'd be open. It's just such a busy day.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just like take a portion of it and go, right, that's my rent for the next wee while. I guess we're open for the next wee while.
Yeah.
You know, so it's good. But there's definitely, I mean, there's so many people that will come that day that will never come back. Or they'll come back next Record Store Day.
Yeah.
which is fine, you just kind of have to to deal with it. But yeah, it's probably worse for smaller labels and stuff like that, but it definitely saves us a lot. It definitely gives you that. It's the only concrete, I think, in running the record store that's like, we're going to get money that day.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to definitely pay the rent that month. We're going to... Not everything else has that. Like, there's stuff, there's albums I'll buy in that I'll commit to a lot of, and if nobody shares my opinion on it, it won't be the moneymaker I hoped it would be. But record store day is kind of like a guarantee. And we can have a big fun day with it. Like, it is nice.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see so many people in the shop. Like, it's nothing better when the shop's busy and everyone's talking and we have music on and stuff like that. So it's great. It's a great day. But there's definitely tons of downsides to it.
Yeah. So we'll talk more about the store and things surrounding it. But I've asked you to pick six tracks that mean a lot to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously quite a difficult exercise for a lot of people. The first track you picked, which is one of the saddest songs ever written and performed, and my hair cries because it's so sad, is Pedro the Lion.
Some days I don't.
when I first discovered this, and it's soundtracked the actual dust of the remains of my heart, which is on the floor. How did you discover Pedro the Lion?
I remember the first song I ever heard was Big Trucks. I remember that really vividly. I don't remember when. I think I was four. I think I heard Big Trucks when I was like 14, and that was all I heard. And I came back when I was like 16, and everything's kind of made a bit more sense. And Pedro the Lion have been my favourite band since that day. And there's a playlist on the shop, like Sonos thing. This is called All Bazan Available, and it's everything Dave Bazan's ever done. And 9 times out of 10, if you walk in the shop, I'll be shuffling it.
Yeah.
I don't think I've gone a day in the past 4 years without playing Pedro the Lion. Yeah, I'm a wee bit obsessed.
And have you managed to see anything live?
No, because the last time Bazan was in Glasgow, I was 16,
yeah.
17 maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll be coming back with this new record, so I'm gonna get to see them.
Are you gonna do everything to try
get
them in store?
Yeah,
I thought you
everything.
Might. Yeah,
everything.
Please try and get David Bazan in with like a broken piano, and you know, just maybe the top lifted off like he was in, you know, a video, and we can just sit and cry all together.
No, I would do absolutely everything, because that would. Like, we've had some really cool in stores, and we've done stuff like that before, but a Bazan one would send me over the edge,
yeah.
I think. Because it kind of, like, the whole arc of those albums remind me of the same. I went to, like, a really religious school. I grew up quite religious. And I kind of fell out of it the exact same way Bazan seems to. So everything about those, and the songs are written so well, everything about those albums just like immediately rung true to me. And particularly that song, it's just like, there's lines in it, there's a line, "If all that's left is duty, I'm falling on my sword," which you can put into just a million different contexts, and it's just really, really nice. And it's the same way I kind of feel about, like when I said I wouldn't want to just sit and sell Rolling Stones reissues.
Yeah.
If that was all the shop was, to pay the rent at the end of the month by selling shite, I wouldn't do it.
No.
So stuff like that, there's stuff he says that just I feel like he's writing it for me, and there's a million people that think like that, which is why he's so good.
Yeah. You're quite a bold character, especially online. there is that don't give a fuck attitude, which I kind of I think there's a group of us that are quite similar in that respect, and we sometimes get in. I don't know, have you got into trouble?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I've got into a lot of trouble, as we probably know. So, I wanted to ask: do you sometimes think maybe I should tone it down because I'm a shop owner, or do you just think no, take it or leave it?
Well, to be honest, I almost feel like I have more of a responsibility to be more of a abrasive wank sometimes if it's in the name of something we believe in. I think we've cultivated a wee kind of a niche and like a group of regulars and a group of people that trust us to kind of look out for them.
Mm-hmm.
So if we ever have any kind of voice or influence or sway, I'm going to try and use it for good.
Yeah.
Or to kind of promote them or the problems they're dealing with. So I've never quite. I mean, my mum hates it. She hates if I swear or anything as well, so.
That's kind of my mum, though. So going back to what you mentioned about religion, is your family still quite religious?
Not in like an overt way, but yeah, my mum's religious and my dad's fairly the same, but nothing like, not
a cult.
Yeah, no, just in like an Irish Glasgow East End way that everyone is. It's just almost like a cultural thing.
So obviously your name.
Yes, a wee bit Italian.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You have to go back about, I think it's 135 years to find the last Italian.
What made them name you Lorenzo?
My Irish granddad's name. My mum's closer to Ireland than my dad is to Italy.
Yeah.
My Irish granddad is called Lawrence. Or my mum's favourite uncle was called Lawrence. Somewhat. So Lorenzo's the Italian for Lawrence. And nobody wants to name me like Stevie Pacitti or, you know, something really Scottish and petite. Nobody wants to do that. So somebody's got to break the chain, but nobody's done it yet. Sam Lorenzo for now.
Good.
But yeah.
Do you get quite a lot of questions about your name?
Yeah, oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
I've never given my name to somebody without having to repeat it.
Yeah.
Or to be like, you sure? Or like, second name in particular as well is just a nightmare.
Yeah.
And it's almost horrible irony that with my accent, I can't even say my name that well. Like, I feel like it rolls really badly when I say my name. So, yeah, but it's distinct, I guess.
Talking about, so let's move on to your next song, which is another complete and utter heartbreaker, which is probably...
I'm a sad boy.
It's a common theme until we get kind of a bit later on. Frightened Rabbit. Now, what album did you discover your supreme love for Frightened Rabbit?
Well, I'd heard Music Now and I'd heard a bit of Sing the Greats, but I was not even in high school, I don't think.
Yeah.
Sing the Greats came out. But I had a teacher who was really kind of indie, so I think I'd heard it off that. But then Modern Leper is the song that sticks out in my head as the kind of genuine big foray from classic rock, like I like Guns N' Roses and that's it, into what I kind of have now, which is this kind of introspective indie, like that's all the kind of music I like.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Modern Leper was the first song that hit me like, this is new, this is what I like now, I guess. And Frightened Rabbit were like my favourite band through my whole teens.
Yeah.
Because they were this, I like the idea that they were from, like now I'm not that precious about, they need to be local bands I like, I'm not that precious about it anymore.
Yeah.
But at the time, it was like Frightened Rabbit, Twilight Sad, Jetpacks were all, you know, big bands at the same time. Or like, they still felt underground. They felt like you were one of the first people to hear about them.
Yeah.
But in reality, they were really breaking. So that whole time and that whole scene is dead sticks out to me as starting high school and then running the whole way through high school. If somebody asked me a favourite band, it would be those three Glasgow bands.
Yeah.
I wouldn't really go much further.
And where did you go to high school?
St. Aloysius.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Did your friends listen
no,
to the same?
No, I mean, I had maybe two friends around the music before I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
And when I set into music, I mean, they would even talk about anything music. And even now, I have tons of my pals from school, or from before the shop, I guess would be the way to put it. And it's all music's just on the back burner, which is totally fine because it gives me a break. But then I have tons of pals I've met since opening the shop that's all we talk about, and it's good. It gives you that outlet for both.
Walks amongst you all, you tired human beings. He's got all the things a cripple has, not two working arms and legs. And vital parts fall from his system and dissolve in Scottish rain. Vitally, he doesn't miss him, he's too fucked up to care. Was that you in front of me? Coming back for even more, exactly the same. You must be a masochist. Love a modern laugher on his last leg. On his last leg. Whoa.
quickly, I guess, well, Scott's quite a gifted man. The way that he uses, he kind of like metaphors, and the way that he creates imagery, and he's so vivid, and you kind of really connect with the way that he's explained kind of heartbreak and his, I guess, various things in life. When you were at, is it just now that you feel that you can kind of connect more with what he was writing about, or did you connect back then?
There was definitely something I was clinging to back then, but I mean, I was definitely far too young when I first heard the record to understand anything that was going on. But I remember it being my favourite album, which is weird to me, because Modern Leopard is just like a massive tune as well when you're hearing it for the first time. I think it was my first obsessiveness with lyrics, maybe.
Yeah.
That things would stick out to me, metaphors would stick out to me. But I couldn't like empathise with, like, I'd never had a relationship breakdown when I'm 13 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, because they maintained their status as my favourite band for my old teens and still up to now, I feel like just every time I go back to a Frightened Rabbit record, I'm finding new things, or I'm empathising more, which is what the kind of basis of the records is.
Yeah.
Like, the way he explains things is so visceral and sincere, like, it's hard not to just kind of get caught up in them. So maybe that was the appeal when I was younger, just this kind of visceral, and the fact that they were local just made it that even more special, I guess.
What's the best show that you've ever been to that they've played?
The last Barra's, like the most recent Barra's one was ridiculous, because they had an amazing light show as well, and I think as the albums have gone on, they've fleshed out that live show. There's a lot more instrumentation as well on the new records, and when you add those new layers of instrumentation to like the first record songs, that had, there's only like bass on like two of those songs, and now they've got five musicians playing them.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they're just getting better as a live band. It's probably the last one.
And do you feel, I mean, I guess this is, I know probably the answer, but do you still feel that kind of sense of pride when you see them doing so well?
Yeah, which is, I mean, I just, as again, like when that scene that I kind of associate so much with me being 14,
mm-hmm.
or me being 13, and trying to tell everyone I'm the first kid, like, you should hear this band, I heard them a year ago, shit like that.
Yeah.
But there's still something nice about that feeling. So I guess now to see them doing, and a lot of artists I love reference Frightened Rabbit, you know, and seeing that kind of shared interest, and it's not just, this is like a local band done good, this is a big band who are important to me as they are to other people and to people I respect.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely like a good feeling.
You obviously spent some time with Scott this week. How was that for you? Is that the first time you've met him?
No, we've when I was 16, we couldn't remember the date the other day, but Scott got Twitter for the first time, right? And as you know, I like Twitter.
Yeah.
So I have my old Twitter account. And Scott did like a patter test thing. So it was like, I can't remember what the joke was. It was like, I'll follow one person and grade their patter. And it was me. and I was like, I was going nuts about it. And I was like carefully curating every tweet to make sure my patter was on point. And then like we met at a signing when I was like just super wee super fan, 16, 17 year old. And then when I opened the shop, they did that gig at the art school. And Tom, Go Flake Paint Tom, was like, have you ever actually met him? Have you ever actually spoken to him? And I was like, no, I can't do that. Like, I know I'm a lot better about it.
Yeah.
I'm always quite bad at being starstruck, kind of guy then.
Yeah.
So that was the first time I went up and Tom goes, this is Lorenzo, he runs up here. And he goes, Lorenzo Pacitti. And I'm freaking out immediately. I'm like, what? He's like, from Twitter. Are you fucking kidding? That was like 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And now, like, yeah, it's just nice to know you're...
Remember.
I don't want to say the word heroes now that I actually know them. It's nice to know your heroes are good people.
Yeah.
That's just something, don't ever get old about that.
That's what I was going to ask. I mean, have you ever met anyone that you've kind of really respected and then you were so disappointed when you actually...
I don't think so, purely because I'm so wary of that.
Yeah.
That anyone who would be disappointing to meet in person...
You wouldn't meet them.
If I saw, like, somebody... Apart from maybe, like, the odd super person I'm, like, a super fan of. If I saw them at a gig, or if I saw them in a bar or on the street, I'm not the type to go approach.
Yeah.
Just because I feel like they're... It's maybe rude.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's not. Some people are better with it than others. But, yeah, I would never really just go and approach people too much. So I feel like if somebody was really bad to meet in person, I probably wouldn't have even bothered entertaining it, unless they were immediately open and welcoming.
Do you... I'm going to save my other question for when a band's played later.
Okay.
But the next... Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. So, I mean, obviously Tom's passed away now.
Mm-hmm.
So why this song? Why does this mean so much? It's The Waiting, and why does this mean so much to you?
I remember it because it's the first Tom Petty song I heard, and I heard it on the episode of The Simpsons when I was very young. Can't remember when. But it's season 9, The Cartridge Family, where Homer goes to buy a gun, and he has to wait 3 days for it. And he sits outside in the garden, and like the montage goes by of the days going past, and The Waiting plays.
Don't it feel like something driven dreams? Yeah, I've never known nothing quite like this. Don't it
remember hearing it. Because they didn't play so much music in the Simpsons, like not licensed music anyway. And I hadn't heard, I still haven't heard Tom Petty's music in a lot of TV or film or anything. So it was one of the first memories I have, I guess, of hearing a song and going to find out who it was. Like going straight to the, like pausing the credits at the end of the VHS to see who that song was by. And it's just such a good song anyway, and it's a song I'll play all the time. And when I found out he died, that was like one of the first. There's a really, because you can go two ways with it. You can go really kind of wallowing and go with that solo record maybe and pick like You Don't Know How It Feels or something like that. But I kind of just wanted to go to the heartbreaker songs that I really liked, like the kind of the more joyous ones. The ones that took me, I guess, from that, it's kind of like the bridge from classic rock to you're into sophisticated guitar music now.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to watch a lot of live stuff of the Heartbreakers, and there was a clip I was obsessed with of them recording Refugee, where they'd record it at Sound City and they'd do it all in one take, and you see Tom as a complete like a psycho but a complete perfectionist, that they're just constantly restarting and constantly restarting. It takes him hours because he wants to do it in one take, full live band. So everything about Tom Petty I was always obsessed with, and The Waiting's just that sticks out as the first song I heard.
You mentioned Tom Goldthwait Paint. Now, he seems to have become quite the friend of several people in Glasgow. I mean, obviously he moved up from Bristol, and I had been following his blog when he was down there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I got to kind of know him and things like that. Tom works in your shop.
Yeah.
We're going to destroy the mystery of Tom being some superstar blogger that goes to the Brit Awards, which I think he did, but that he actually does work as mm-hmm. well.
Yep.
So how did that happen?
I used to read Tom's blog.
Yeah.
So I was following it, and then when we made the Twitter account for the shop, I made it like 3 months early, and started following people I wanted to follow. And Tom was the one that messaged me. And he just, I don't know if he was, we didn't really post anything about the shop yet, so I didn't know how he kind of got the idea that we would have similar instincts. But he messaged just to see like if there's anything he could post to help the PR of it, or to like get the launch known about or whatever. And then we kind of got into talking about doing something interesting. I can't remember what it was, really vague. So we met at the Cafe Nero around the corner, the first time I'd ever met him. And then we talked for like 20 minutes about what he could post about the shop, or if he wanted to write a story about it or something like that. And then at the end of it, I was like, oh, I'm interviewing staff all day. We have to get a couple of members of staff. And he went, I could do this. He was like, I could do this in hours. So as soon as he said that, I was like, okay, you're hired. You're on board. So from day one, it's just been me and Tom. So he's been the... apart from the odds, like we had Phil from Chorist, he worked maybe 5-6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had a few other 1 or 2 week type people, but it always ends up in the fact that I work every day anyway.
Yeah.
So we don't really need more than me and Tom, and as long as Tom's free, I'm always going to have Tom, because I don't think I'd have, I don't want to blow too much smoke up his arse. I don't quite know what the shop would be like if it wasn't for Tom.
But the two of you seem to be very socially conscious. That's one thing that you do share in common.
Yeah.
And you both seem to be very righteous in terms of what you talk about and what you believe in and what you support. And sometimes I guess that there's a lot of respect from people for both of you because of that. And Is there things that Tom's taught you since you've kind of opened the shop?
There's wee bits of everything I feel like I probably owe to
mm-hmm.
to Tom. I don't quite know what the shop would be like if it wasn't for him working here, me seeing him once a week, you know, and then me talking to him about music.
But it's a community that you've created as well here, I believe. And the next artist that you've picked for the playlist, so Julian Baker, that must have been, I mean, now where she's gone
mm-hmm.
and where she, especially recently in terms of the publicity, you had an in-store.
Yeah.
And how did that come about?
So the day, I think it's to the day I opened the shop, we opened the front doors to the shop, she dropped her first album on Bandcamp. I think it's the exact day, 28th of October or something like that, I want to say, 2015. I'm going to assume it was through Go Flake Paint.
Yeah.
But I don't actually know. I think somebody might have just tweeted me out of the blue. But I heard Sprained Ankle and completely fell in love with it. And then it was the first record I ever tried to like import. You know, the first record I was like, I can't just get this off my usual supplier. Find this. So we used to import it from like a really early stage, and it's by a mile our biggest seller still, because it was proper press play in the shop, somebody will come up to the desk and go, what is that?
Yeah.
And it was amazing because it meant everything about the shop I wanted it to be. I could find music that wasn't in the mainstream, I could import it, there was no one else in Glasgow doing it. There was big shops in England that used to DM me and ask me where I'm getting it as soon as you started getting big. And it was like, you know, it felt like we were doing the right thing. We were finding a band, falling in love with it, and getting that message out to our regulars that you should hear this. You need to hear this.
So basically, you were doing what a blog does, but in retail. You were doing it as a shop.
Again, that's probably like a big part of Tom's influence.
Yeah.
Is me being like, that's why I respect most about his blog.
Yeah.
So that's what I want the shop to be like. And since then, like since that day, we went to our gig in Glasgow, our first gig here, and me and our manager became really good pals, my pal Sean, and we ended up, we've gone to like football games together when he comes over and stuff like that. We just became really good pals, and it was like, so I had a line of contact to be like, you know, we're obviously the biggest supporter of our music in the UK, particularly at the time. And I was like, it just gave us a line of contact to be like, do you want to do this when you come next time? Or, and it was always, I'd never seen her do in stores really before or anything like that, so I was always like, it's never gonna happen, like, but no, because she's super nice, they were really up for it because I think they appreciated the support. But yeah, both those records have meant a lot to the shop, even just like a really basic financial level. Those were guaranteed sales, which is rare to come by. You know, she sold probably 10 times as much as we sold that new Radiohead record, which is probably a big release. Run the Jewels were probably our second biggest seller, and she sold double them, you know, and the new record's the same.
That's insane, isn't it?
So it's felt like a proper, we've championed an artist. You know, we haven't, like, we're not a label, we haven't put money into it, we just championed her because we liked it.
Yeah.
Used to cost a fair bit to import it. But, yeah, it just felt good to be vindicated almost. And then just, like, I think her music's amazing and she's really great, so I'm just buzzing to see her getting the recognition she deserves. I feel like she's really young, she's, like, 22, 21.
Oh, so that's just a couple of years younger than you.
I'm an old soul. So she's got, you know, years and years ahead of her to become... She's already one of my favourite songwriters ever. I would honestly say that. I feel like Sprained Ankle hit me so hard. And I feel like her lyrics on the new record are so great. She's got so many more years to become millions of other young girls or kids' favourite songwriter.
Well, that's the thing. If she's doing this now, what the hell's going to come... in the future, yeah. Which is incredible. The next artist you've picked is Foo Fighters,
yeah.
And the song's Hero. The the question that I wanted to ask, and it kind of taps into what we were talking about before. So Dave Grohl, if he was walking down the street,
I'd be all over him.
Would you?
Yeah.
So that kind of contradicts.
Because I'd probably be terrified about it. I don't know, he seems so, like, now he seems so unapproachable or ethereal because he's so big. We'll be right back. I mean, he was so, so big when I was 10, 11, whatever, at the time, but it was like, that was my rock star. You know, he was my be all and end all.
So what I wanted to, so I, Nirvana were my, that's my band of okay. all time, like everything. Okay. I had to take 2 weeks off school to mourn the death of Kurt Cobain. Were Foo, was it Nirvana or was it Foo Fighters? Right.
Foo Fighters, always Foo Fighters. I used to, my mum used to hate me because I used to print on like our shitty inkjet printer mm-hmm. Foo Fighters pictures off Google Images and use them as posters, so I didn't have to buy posters. So I had a wall of blue tacked like full colour Foo Fighters Google Images. Probably cost a fortune in ink. But yeah, I used to go to all the big, I was obviously far too young to go to any of the shows that were even remotely intimate. So I used to go to the Hampden shows and the Murrayfield shows, and went to Tina Park 2011 just to see Foo Fighters essentially. Yeah, they will always be, I think, my favourite band. I don't know, like, I'm older and I'm more picky about music, and I'm more, I guess, not negative. I can pick things up, I can slag things off a bit more with music.
Are you a bit more sceptical now about things, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. But the Foo Fighters, like, even their new stuff, and everyone's, it's really easy to call them generic stadium fillers, whatever, but it's impossible not to make stadium filler music when you're filling stadiums. And I really like that new record. I don't think it's amazing.
Yeah.
But it's really, I enjoy it. The last one, the one before that, Sonic Highways, was the only one I was kind of like, oh God, maybe I'm going to be like, maybe this is me turning into everyone else who thinks Foo Fighters are overrated and whatever. But I will never, like, I'll still put that record on the car. I will never, Foo Fighters could put out the worst album ever. And if you ask me for a rating out of 10, I'd give it a 7. I'm not a nostalgic person. Yeah. I hate, if I could wipe my Facebook clean every month, I would do it. I hate looking back at pictures from years ago. I hate talking about school. I'm just not a nostalgic person at all. But if I put Foo Fighters on, I will just, like, my entire positive teen emotions come through. Like, Foo Fighters were never like my, they don't make sad music, so they were never my sad times band. Everything about Foo Fighters to me is just positive. And My Hero was like, it's the really kind of emotional start of that song. And there's a Nate Mendel interview I remember where he said that they were talking about splitting the band up, and then Dave came in with My Hero to the practice room, and he was like, oh, this song could be good. And then they played it that night, and as soon as he heard it play live in the big room, he was like, oh, this band's gonna go on forever now. Like, he knew that was the song. And I love that song so much. And I remember Tina Park actively crying when they played it. And I'm not a...
You're not an emotional person.
But I remember Tina Park being like,
I'm not going to go as far as saying that you're a robot. but you do have this kind of... I don't want to say monotone, because that makes you sound like you're a boring bastard. But you are very kind of concealed in ways when you meet you.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm not a, I don't know. I don't know the way to put it, but like, I like so much emotional art and music, and that's the most important, like, sincerity is the most important thing to me.
Yeah.
Maybe that's, I'm so overly trying to be sincere that I don't want to put on any airs and graces. I don't want to be like, if something hasn't genuinely moved me to bawl my eyes out, I'm not going to kind of force it.
Yeah.
In the same way with like being super excited about anything. Like, even that Primavera thing where they asked, like, to see the lineup.
So we need to explain this, because some people might not know what that is. All I know is that I'm on Twitter or Facebook, and all of a sudden I see your face on a Primavera teaser video. Looking kind of... Well, my other half, Stuart, joked and went, he's so fucking acting. And... and I was like, this is what I wanted to ask you, were you acting?
No.
No,
because I don't think in the video I'm like that. In the video I say the word fuck and I like do a wee applause thing. I did the wee applause thing because I said to the guy before, it was all Europeans and they were all super nice and friendly and happy, and I'm like, I also got there at 10:30 in the morning and all the drinks were free, so That also probably plays
alcoholic
into it.
Alcoholic drink?
Yes.
Oh my god.
So that probably plays into it a wee bit. But I was like, I said to the guy when he was like making me up, he's like, you're going to see the lineup. And then I was like, I'm not going to give you a big reaction here. Like, you can show me anything and I'm going to have to force anything I give you. He's like, nah, just be natural. But I kind of wanted to do something.
Yeah.
The fuck is genuine. It is a genuine fuck.
And what band made you say fuck?
I can't remember.
Right.
I don't know if that was because of Steven, but I can't remember. Because I saw the video back and I was like, I remember saying that, but I don't know what I was fucking looking at. And then the wee applause is like at the end of it where they were all staring at me in silence. There was like 10 guys behind the camera staring at me in silence, and I was like, I've got to give them
something.
Yeah. So I was like, give them a wee applause. Whereas all the other fucking people were like bawling their eyes out and hugging each other and shit. I'm worse at faking things than I am at.
Yeah.
If I was acting, you'd have really, like, there'd be no doubt, because I'm not good at that.
Someone was trying to ask me to explain Primavera compared to, say, certain festivals that are happening in Scotland, which I'm going to refrain from being negative. The only thing I'm going to be negative about is about the lack of women and I guess people of colour and just there's just really not a fair representation in all seriousness. The Primavera as a festival, what if you were to say three things that really makes it what like the best festival for you, what are they?
The city, Barcelona in general, is amazing. There's an intent to make the festival about good music. There's like an intent there, and they try really hard to, which is why this year's gone a wee bit different, because they try really hard to actually represent the tastes, or they represent the changing landscape of the people that come there. Like, if you look back to like earlier years, the quality's still there, but it's maybe more focused to certain other genres or other kind of scenes that were up at that time. So there's an intent from them to make it representative.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I don't even think it's like a... I don't think you have to think too hard to make it a representative of women or people of colour, because if it wasn't, that's when you get bad festivals, because the lineup will be bad because you're not putting the best music there.
Yeah.
It's not it's not to do with me people having to think extra hard about being equal opportunists. It's genuinely just put the best music on and you'll find it really easy to put men and women on it.
Why, this is the question as well I wanted to ask you. So obviously we've got a big festival happening in Scotland called Transmit, and it's very what is kind of deemed regularly is very lad rock centric. Mm-hmm. in what is on the festival. Why do you think that the audiences within Scotland are more geared towards those kind of bands?
I guess you can argue with ticket sales.
Mm-hmm.
But I've refused to believe Stereophonics are booked to sell tickets.
Yeah.
I refuse to believe that. I just don't understand. There's nothing I understand.
Let's add Shed 7 in there as well.
Shed 7. Yeah, there is nobody that's going to go to Transmit and go, I'm fucking buzzing to see Shed 7. I am going to Transmit to see Shed 7 today.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Arctic Monkeys, totally get.
Yeah, I'm fine with Arctic Monkeys. Yeah.
I love the first couple records. I don't want to be that guy that says that. I love the first couple records. But I do, and I think they still make fine music.
Mm-hmm.
I totally get that booking. That's a big name, and it's that kind of sound. But there's a lot on that lineup that just... I don't have any idea what the thinking is. I couldn't even hazard a guess. I don't even know if it's intentionally... It does feel like trolling at this point, because I can't think of any logical reason why you're booking some of these bands.
Yeah.
I can't.
So one of the things that I've been quite consistent in terms of saying is that if you don't like something, try and find something else that, that you do like. And that's why I don't really... the only thing I'm negative about, as I've mentioned, is the kind of lack of diversity on the lineup.
Yep.
For me, having Primavera is an amazing thing, because it's something that I will go to and I can go to. Although I'm kind of sad that we're not kind of having that representation in Scotland with a festival. Mm-hmm. and showing that diversity, if, so say for example, this is another thing that I want to ask you, say for example Primavera, that festival was based in Scotland and it was based in Glasgow Green, would it be the same?
Yeah. I thought there was the only part of me that had any hope was when they announced Tina Park was dead, and it was we were going to have a 3-day festival in the city, mm-hmm. no camping, and the rumour immediately was Radiohead headlining. I was like, oh my god, we could be a destination festival. Because when I was in Barcelona, everyone wanted to talk to me about how Glasgow is such a great music mm-hmm. city. Everyone thinks that. You know, the touring schedule here is great. You can go see so many bands here. But when it comes to festivals, like, we could have been a European destination festival. I genuinely believe that. If you done it right. And you had they had the upper hand of Radiohead straight away. That was the rumour straight away. Like, it wasn't even as if we needed people to be on board with it.
Unfortunately, I don't feel that the rest of the lineup really kind of provided a great underbelly to Radiohead. And it felt a bit odd for me. So I was going to see more of the kind of up-and-coming bands than anyone that was underneath mm-hmm. Radiohead. And the reason that we went was for Radiohead yeah. at the end of the day. And again, because we'd see them at Primavera.
Yep.
And that was the best musical 2.5 hours of my entire life. I think I just cried for 2.5 hours. And I felt kind of almost a bit like it. I just didn't feel the crowd at all.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't go to Transmits. I can't comment on the crowd. I think people kind of, these crowds are created by what you give them.
Yeah.
I can't blame anyone. I don't blame a big group of guys causing havoc and drinking too much and being lads when that's all you're giving them.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're putting up. That's what you've made the day about. You know, deal with it. The crowds you get at any festival are a product of the lineup. Festivals get reputations because of their lineup. You know, I don't believe people pick destinations to go be arseholes. If you make a festival purely about the music, you're going to get music fans. And you're going to get crowds that police themselves. Whereas, I mean, I can't comment on Transmit, but that's just what festivals are made by the lineup first and foremost. I don't mm-hmm. think you can, if there's an argument to be made that if we gave it this lineup, then Transmit would be a whole different festival. It's like, yeah, but that's the kind of thing you should be aiming for if you're trying to find the same problems. Like last year, they got so many pelters for that lineup, and it still had Radiohead on it, and that was what let them off. And I kind of thought this might be the plan now. Find a big headline indie-ish act that lets you off and fill the rest with their... Like, I actually don't really like... I could be in the minority here. I probably am. I don't like the idea of festivals making a big deal about having tents for up-and-coming bands. I know that sounds terrible.
So why is that?
I think it almost gives them like an out. I think it's used as like an out.
Do you mean to provide that balance?
Yeah, it's like, look, we've got, yeah, sure, we have these big ticket sellers that maybe a lot of people don't like, whatever, but that's because we're making room for up-and-coming talent, and it's the up-and-coming talent stage. And I don't know what they're getting paid, but I doubt it.
So I'm going to provide, I just have to provide a devil's advocate here,
okay.
And a balance here. So with Primavera, you've kind of got a similar thing in that, I suppose that, in the lead up and during the day you've got the grassy verge, I'll say, because I can't remember the stage, whether it's the Primavera stage, and then you've got another stage which is down some steps,
yep.
In the kind of auditorium part,
mm-hmm.
And then you've got some various other bits. How does that compare?
I think there's a big difference between shoehorned local young talent and bands there on, like, Primavera, top to bottom, is totally curated like nuts there on there. I mean, Julian Baker is the best example. We saw her on the smallest stage at 5:30 in the afternoon. That's about as low down as you can get, and that's that kind of quality you're getting.
Yeah.
You know, nothing feels forced or shoehorned in. There's no, everyone's, all the stages are set up perfectly. They're all they all kind of feel like they're, you're just picking your choice throughout the day. It doesn't feel like you're waiting to go to the main stage. It just feels like you're going to see good bands, and you can jump onto any stage and see one. Whereas there's some way to exploit's maybe the wrong word, but these younger bands are probably really grateful to get to say they're playing festivals, and it might be good for them, I don't know. But I do feel like they're used to kind of deflect criticism and just as cheap labour, essentially. You can fill a whole stage with guys that'll play a festival for 50 quid mm-hmm. or less, which is, you know, you're filling a whole day's programme of a festival you're charging hundreds of pounds for.
Yeah, there's quite a jump between the fee that you would pay a main artist and then yeah. as you go down the hierarchy.
I would love to see. I'm not an all day fan in terms of I won't stand and watch music for all day, but I like the idea of up and coming bands or local talent working with maybe local promoters, smaller promoters, or themselves, and putting together, you know, days of content or nights of independent bands. I feel like that's better for them.
Yeah.
And it's something I would go see.
Yeah.
If somebody I trusted told me there's a night of four great unsigned up and coming bands on, I'd be much more likely to go see it than I would to like jump along to a stage at a festival and see a really probably a crowd who don't really give a fuck
mm-hmm.
and a stage far too big for a band that isn't ready for it, just so we can see a news article the next day that talks about how this band blew everyone away at this festival and nothing will come of it and they get paid 30 quid for it or something like that. Just seems all pointless to me. Instead, they could be kind of making actual grassroots fans and progress while paying themselves and keeping the money within their scene or within their own bands. I just feel like they're selling themselves short sometimes.
Yeah.
That's why I feel like it's a wee bit exploiting. But as I say, the Coyne, they get to play a big festival.
I know.
You know, so nobody's really going to say no, and that's totally fine. I'm never going to.
Yeah, it's the flip of the coin, isn't it? Before we go into your last track choice, I want to talk about your label.
Mm-hmm.
Why the fuck did you add that, the stress of having a label onto a shop?
It just feels like more. I can't see myself doing the shop long term. I would do the label because I find it fun. I find, like, if somebody asked me what my favourite kind of unsigned small Scottish bands were, if somebody came to the shop and asked for advice on who to go see, I would have said the three bands I signed, you know, so I got excited about that. And this year we're taking it up like a lot, a few gears, we're kicking up a few gears.
In what respect?
Well, it's three full lengths at least. We'll probably end up with six full length albums.
From those three artists?
From three other artists as well, hopefully.
Wow.
It's just something I find a lot more.
So am I allowed to ask what your model is for your label?
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward, I think, with most other indie labels. We recoup what we put in, then we split 50-50 with the artist.
Right, okay.
Pretty straightforward. Or, like, it's all very flexible. Like, if Wesley comes in, he's from the Great Albatross, and they're doing a few shows.
I love Wesley.
He's the best. He's got a new solo record coming.
Yeah, I saw that. So I just wanted to talk about Wesley briefly because he's I wanted to sign him and I couldn't. And it was bittersweet for me that you took him on. But I was also like, fuck, I wanted Wesley.
Brother, Do I make you mad?
Wesley from The Great Albatross is one of the most talented and endearing and wonderful singer-songwriters I've ever come across since I've started working in Scottish music, which you probably feel the same, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I mean, I met Wesley through... I'd heard his old band, Boris Smile.
Oh my God, that's so wonderful.
On a Top Shelf Records sampler.
Yeah.
I didn't know Wesley. I wouldn't know him to see him in the street. And Sean from John Knox Sex Club was in the shop, and we were gonna do our first. We stopped doing because it just became a hassle to get good people. We used to do dessert days with Stacey from Bearsign, who would make donuts.
And Stacey Walton.
Yep.
An institution.
And we'd have some like acoustic live music on, and. Sean from John Knox was trying out some solo stuff, So he was in the shop, he was talking about it, and then I was talking about, we need maybe one more person for that bill, and he turns to just a guy who's in the shop, who he waved at on the way in, and goes, you should ask Wesley. And I'm like, I don't know who the fuck Wesley is. I don't know who this guy is. And he's like, but Sean's like, you should ask him. And he's immediately, Wesley's immediately super nice. So without even hearing what he did, I was like, yeah, sure, give me your email. And as soon as he left, I was like, I texted Sean, I was like, who is this guy? And then he sent me the Gravelshoss, and I'd heard Summer's Gone on a split with Into It Over It, which is on Struggle Town.
Yeah,
that was the only song I recognised immediately, and I loved it straight away. And then he came in and played solo in the shop, loved it, became Pally. And then as soon as I found out he was putting a new album out, it was kind of the same thing we were debating, we should, because I didn't want to label this early, I kind of wanted to wait a few years. But it was like the same circumstance with Codest and Clay. They were ready to, they wanted to do something. I was worried somebody else would get there first. Same with Wesley. And we were at an Into It Over It show, and Evan from Into It Over It and him and Wesley know each other. And Evan goes, when's your solo record come? When's your new Albatross record coming out? And Wesley goes, I'm trying to find somebody to put it out. And I immediately turned to him and went, I'll do it. Just I'll do it. And then kind of went from there. Because Wesley,
what was Wesley's reaction to that?
I can't tell if he was sceptical or
he seemed maybe a wee bit sceptical. I think he was probably more shocked than anything.
Yeah, we were just standing next to each other at a gig. But me and Wesley became good pals because we used to come to the shop, and he's obsessed with David Bazan as well.
Yeah, and you can hear that in his music. Yeah, though.
So we just talk with David Bazan, or we talk about stuff like that. So I just knew this is somebody, that's all I want out of the bands and the label, is to kind of feel that shared, we're all pushing in the same direction.
Mm-hmm.
So Codest and Clay play music that I adore, and we're all of a similar mindset, particularly Codest, for similar age, which is nice because most of the time I'm punching up age wise if I'm dealing with people in the music industry and they don't take me seriously. So that was nice. It was just, and we became friends, so it was nice to work with your friends, and it became a lot less of like a challenging risk and a lot less scary.
Mm-hmm.
When I knew I was putting out three records by my three groups of pals, and it's the exact same this year, but just with more money involved, I guess. But it's like money I'm really happy to spend, you know. It's, I have full confidence in those albums to make it back. I don't feel like I'm putting myself in any kind of hole.
So I'm going to talk about the last artist that you've picked, and then I want to ask you briefly about what's coming up. So Live Oak. why this track?
I love country music, love it, and that's,
really,
that's something me and Tom hate, like, don't get on about most of the time.
This is probably what I'm not going to get on with.
I
you
adore
about
country music.
Why?
Because it's sincere and it's storytelling.
So did you like Taylor Swift when she was country era?
No.
So when you say country music, let's define this a bit more.
Well, I don't like when people call modern, like they don't, when people say modern country.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the term would maybe be chart country. Like I don't like Lady Antebellum and all that. I guess that's the only pure country thing I think of. I love Willie Nelson, and I love,
right,
I do like really old fashioned country music, but there's a lot of amazing singer songwriters in a country vein. There's Jason Isbell, there's Tyler Childers, Coulter Wall, so many. I just like sincere music, and when country artists do it, most of the time they either, there's two ways I enjoy it. It's they either just say it flat out, really in like a devastating way. Like devastating country music is heartbreaking. So it's either just super devastating, super straightforward and visceral, or it's done through storytelling. And that's Jason Isbell track, is a song about, he used to be a really bad drinker, and he's been sober for 6 years now, I think. So that was his first big album after he was sober.
There's a man who walks beside me, he is who I used to be, and I wonder if she sees him and confuses him with me, and I wonder who she's pining for on nights I'm not around. Could it be the man who did the things I'm living now? I was rougher than the timber, shipping out of Fond du Lac, when I headed south at 17, the sheriff on my back. I'd never held a lover in my arms or in my
my gaze. So I found another victim every couple days. But the night I fell in love with her, I made my weakness known to the fighters and the farmers digging dusty fields alone. The jealous innuendos of the lonely-hearted men let me know what kind of country I was sleeping in. Well, you couldn't stay a loner on the plains before the war. When my neighbors took to slighting me, I had to ask what for. Rumors of my wickedness had reached our little town. Soon she'd heard about the boys I used to hang around. We'd robbed a Great Lakes freighter, killed a couple men aboard. When I told her, her eyes flickered like the sharp steel of a sword. All the things that she'd suspected, I'd expected her to fear, was the truth that drew her to me when I landed here. There's a man who walks beside me, he is who I used to be. And I wonder if she sees him and confuses him with me. And I wonder who she's pining for on nights I'm not around. Could it be the man who did the things I'm living down? I carved a cross from live oak and a box from shortleaf pine. Buried her so deep she touched the water table line. Picked up what I needed and I headed south again. To myself I wonder, would I ever find another friend? There's a man who walks beside her, he is who I used to be. I wonder if she sees him and confuses him with me.
And it was the one that kind of sent him into stardom a wee bit. And that track is about him worrying about whether people think of him the same way. But he does it through a completely fictional story about well in the past, about this kind of troublemaker guy who moves to a different place to hope he gets away from all these, to kind of move on and become a new person. But he knows that follows him around everywhere, and he worries that his wife still sees him, like, is attracted to him as the troublemaker, as the party animal, or the guy used to be. So that's what he's thinking in his Jason Isbell's head.
Yeah.
But the way he tells the story is like a guy who robbed a freighter with like a gang, and he moves to a different country. But the whispers kind of go about the town, and he can't really escape it. And he's worried that the woman he's with likes him because she thinks of him as the guy who used to be the rock star, I guess, in real life. So it just kind of exemplifies what I like about his storytelling in particular. He'll make a completely different character for every song. And I just like sitting and listening to stories that you can pick apart. And he's just got a beautiful voice as well and plays guitar really nicely, which is good.
You said earlier that you don't see yourself running a record shop for your life.
Yeah.
So what are the kind of things that you do see yourself?
No idea.
That's a great thing.
I want to keep doing interesting things. I want to be involved in new music. Like my dream was always just to work at a desk job for a label, like a big label I liked. Like I went to Seattle because I wanted to knock on Sub Pop store and say hi. And I wanted to go to KEXP and say hi. And I went to Austin because I just wanted to see the Willie Nelson statue and go to Austin City Limits and shit like that. That's all I want to do. So wherever that takes me, I guess. I mean, I can carry the LP records, I guess. That's why I like Twitter and stuff like that. I just like it being something more than just a place where people buy records.
What's the one thing that you've learnt? What's the one thing that's kind of really stuck with you?
It's important, I think, to find people you trust and really lean on them, because there's so many people you won't trust. I think the better you can get at picking those people out of a crowd, the better. And the more you kind of just get used to the fact you're going to have a specific audience and engage with them, instead of just being like catering to everyone. If we tried to cater to everyone, we'd be shot, because it would have been, nobody would have cared about the interesting things we do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, and if somebody my age wanted to open a record shop, I'd tell them not to fucking do it. Yeah, I wouldn't, because I just feel like I'm too, it's the winter that does this to me, but I feel like I'm too young to be sitting in a record shop.
Yeah.
When it's great, it's great. So when a Friday new release is out and there's tons of good stuff, I love it, because people are coming in and buying new stuff and we're talking about it. But I do just want to be more active. I guess just stay active, because otherwise you'll get bogged down in what you're doing. If you're doing multiple things, the things you're getting bogged down in don't seem as bad. So when I'm doing admin for the shop, I'll take a wee break and do stuff for the label, and it's a wee bit more immediate. You can kind of get that feedback straight away, whereas nobody cares, nobody knows that I sit up here and pour over spreadsheets and shit like that, which is why I'll just go on Twitter and I'll just be like, this is work, because I'm firing off tweets about new music.
Mm-hmm.
So it's my release. But yeah, I think finding people you trust, because there's so many wee different facets to music, the music industry. So I have promoters I trust better than others, and I have even just finding stuff like artists and photographers and every wee thing. If you find groups of people, and usually you'll find them all linked to each other, you know, particularly in Glasgow, there's definitely just, everyone's,
it's
quite fractured in Glasgow.
A bed of incest, let me tell you.
So yeah, it's, I think that's the most important thing. But yeah, don't open a record shop.
Okay, so we'll end with
don't
open a record shop.
Unless you've got like a lot of money to piss away.
Okay.
Or like, in fact, yeah, just don't open one.
Yeah, let's just end it. LP Records says don't open a record shop. Yeah.
Come to mind, but...
Yeah, but buy stuff.
Mine, yeah.
Thank you so much.
It's been great.
It's been wonderful speaking to you. And please remind people of the address of your shop.
We're on Park Road, right next to Kelvin Bridge subway station. You can jump straight off Kelvin Bridge and you'll see us. We're a big purple shop. Hard to miss.
Sorry. A big throbbing purple
shop. Yeah, a big throbbing purple shop.
On the street. Sorry. Thank you, Lorenzo.
One, two, three, four. Such an attitude.
Hey, Houston, tired of battling the mighty pollen? We've got your back. Aspire Allergy and Sinus offers lasting allergy relief so you can chuck those temporary fixes and savor that sweet, sweet taste of victory over pollen. With same-day results and tailor-made treatment plans, we've turned the tables on allergies. Aspire patients enjoy relief that lasts for years. Schedule your appointment today at AspireAllergy.com. Turn your daily sneeze-a-thon into a breeze with Aspire Allergy and Sinus. Go to AspireAllergy.com.